WDBQ. Hi, and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and I thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM, as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing well today. I hope your life is going excellent. I hope it's always going excellent. But for most of us that live in the real world, our life doesn't always go excellent. And when it comes to families and people, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, including addiction. It's the number one thing, I think, that really breaks up families, that hurts. And it's not just alcohol, although I think alcohol is a huge problem in our society, and I think most of us would agree. It's really terrific if you can be one of those people that don't have any problem with it and just, you know, take it very slow. But a lot of people have huge addictions with it, and that's, of course, what we are going to talk about today, addiction. We are going to talk to Christopher Kennedy Lawford, who has written a terrific, absolutely wonderful new book. I read this book, and I think anybody who reads this book can never lie to themselves again. The book is called Recover to Live, Kick Any Habit, Manage Any Addiction. And I want to welcome Christopher Kennedy Lawford to Shannon's Corner. Hi, how are you today?
Hi, Shannon. Good to be here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Now, if everybody's listening, I'm sure they know Kennedy Lawford, that you are the Kennedy clan. Your father was a famous, well-known, good-looking actor. You look very like your father. And so, you know, that's the great news, is that you had, you know, you come from this wonderful family. But the other side of that picture is that you were an addict for many years, and you had a lot of trouble. So, you know, when we think about that, we think that most of us hide this thing in our family about addiction, and I think that's the big secret in the United States. But there are so many people addicted in the United States. There's so many people walking around. I think that there's 17 million in the United States that are considered to be alcoholics, 19, almost 20 million users of illegal drugs in the United States. This is right. A big problem. So regardless of where you come from, but you started taking drugs when you were 12. You have kicked the habit. You have really come a long way. You work with the White House. You've been, you are now Goodwill Ambassador for the United Nations on drugs and crime. You overcame this, but most people have a tough time overcoming this. How do you overcome something like this? Are we born like this, or is it something that just that we just take wrong turns along the way?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I think there's a biological component to this and also environmental, and you really can't ignore the complex interplay between those two. I think the mistake is to sort of try to pigeonhole this illness and look at it simplistically. It's a really complicated disease. And recovery from it means addressing pretty much every aspect of a person's life. The critical thing to understand here is the cost of this to our society. Monetarily, it's a $600 billion a year issue. Forget about human misery, which is very consequential. Obliterating families generationally. I mean, it's a real problem that we need to really sort of come to terms with. My issue as an advocate is to address the issue of stigma and discrimination. Mm-hmm. There are 13,000 laws on the books across the country that discriminate against people in recovery. That's in recovery. Forget about people that are actually dealing with this issue as a disease. This is either a disease or a law enforcement issue. We have to deal with the criminal justice aspect of it, but we definitely need to really need to get on the same page when we're looking at this thing as a medical issue.
So you're saying that people go to jail instead of go to recovery, and even in recovery, there's laws against it. I mean,
if you do illegal activity and you're prosecuted for it as a crime. And quite frankly, there are cases that where that is the case. But fortunately, we've adopted, you know, in a lot of the country, drug courts, which actually take folks out of the criminal justice system for just issues of possession, and give them the opportunity to treat this illness. Obviously, if there's a violence associated with any of these crimes or those kinds of things, those have to be addressed in the criminal justice system. But again, you know, a lot of these laws that are on the books are, you know, for instance, if you're convicted of a drug crime in some states, you can't vote, you can't drive a car. There are lots of things like that prevent people from getting back to their lives. once they've found recovery. And that's one of the things that I'm concerned about.
Well, you should be concerned about. So you're basically saying we get those who get recover also still get punished. So there's kind of like, why recover if I'm still going to be punished for this? You keep saying illness, though. Most people don't think of it as illness. They think of it as some sort of character flaw. Like, you know, you're just kind of a little weak. But you consider it more of an illness?
Well, it is a brain illness. So we have indisputable evidence at this point that points to that. We have brain scans. We have brain research. I mean, anybody who thinks this is a question of bad choices or bad behavior is clearly living in the dark ages. This is, the American Society of Addiction Medicine has redefined addiction as a chronic brain illness. It's alcoholism has been a disease since the 1950s. I mean, the evidence here, the medical evidence is, as they say, indisputable. So folks have to understand that, and whether they believe it or not, because they're able to have a glass of wine with dinner and not, you know, go on a bender, there are people who are constitutionally different than they are in terms of their brain chemistry, and they're not able to do that for whatever reason. And people have to, you know, whether they accept it or not, that's the truth.
Well, and you've done a lot of study of this book. I mean, you go so in depth about just that, the illness, about what happens to our brain. You also give a lot of hope, which we'll talk about a little bit, of what you can do. There's a lot of self-assessment. So you certainly have studied this. You certainly know what you're talking about. But for most people, they think, most people, it starts very young. You want to get social. You want to get out there. You have a drink or two. You think you're fine. It happens in college or younger. And then it just takes a hold of you. So how do we stop it from going so far, and how do you stop it once you're in that horrible place of it taking a hold of you? How do you get out of that if you don't understand what's going on?
Well, the first thing, the critical thing, is that people want to get help, and then they're able to access help. You know, we talk a lot about the figures in terms of 1 in 10 people who have this illness being able to access help. That's true, but the reason for that is not just treatment is unavailable, because treatment is available. Good treatment is available. I mean, it's tough. It's outpatient programs or inpatient programs. We need to continue to focus on getting better treatment and making it more available. But the problem comes with people who have this illness who convince themselves that they don't need help. And the truth is, this is a brain illness that tells you you don't have an illness.
You say in your book, the biggest problems addicts have is that they believe the way they feel. What does that mean? Are you basically saying what you just said, you don't think you need to get help because you convince yourself that you're just fine and you can handle this?
No, I don't think that that's the case, because most people who are chronic in this disease are not having a good time. You know, the illusion is that, you know, people who see alcoholics on the streets or drug addicts on the streets, they think those people don't look like they're having a good time. And in fact, they're not. They don't know how to get out of it. And it is enormously difficult to detoxify from these chemicals. Nora Volkow, who runs NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, and was one of the most prominent neuroscientists in the world, told me about studies that they did at NIH with rats, where they had white rats on one side of a cage and metal electrified bars in the middle, and those rats wouldn't cross those bars for sex, food, or water, the major biological imperative. They would die rather than cross those bars, those electrified bars. Once you addicted them to any of these substances, they would cross those bars all day long.
Wow.
That is the power of these chemicals in the reward center of your brain. So what happens with addicts is they even though the drugs stop working and the alcohol stops working, the memory of what it was is so profound. Even the memory of it is so profound. They will destroy their lives. They will kill themselves rather than face life without those chemicals. Now, it's a process. You know, lots of people have gotten sober. Millions of people have found recovery. Mm-hmm. It is possible to do. The question is, and this is what you asked me, is how can people get help, and when do they know they can get help?
Right.
When they want help.
Yeah.
The thing that I did right was I didn't die and I stayed connected to the higher part of myself that wanted to get better.
Well, good for you. And there are a lot of people that die, but I suspect that most of them are more like you. The human condition, we want to survive. We want to stay alive. The question is how do you get the strength that you had along the way? And you hit some pretty rock bottom places, right? I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't one of these easy sort of addictions. You really hit rock bottom. They say once you hit rock bottom, that that's it, then you're fine. Did that happen with you?
No, I did. I mean, I hit rock bottom, but I hit rock bottom 6 years before I got sober.
No.
And my last bottom was I basically had finally run out of money. Bottoms are meant to be elevated, and that's what we're trying to do now. Not everybody has to hit bottom. We can elevate the bottom, and we've done that successfully with millions of folks who go into 12-step programs or go into treatment before they've lost everything. As a matter of fact, the critical thing to remember about this illness is the sooner that you intervene in the process, the better chances you have of it working. So with kids, adolescents, that's why it's critical for parents to pay attention to what's going on in their homes with regard to this, especially if there's a genetic legacy, that they intervene on their kids immediately. Zero tolerance.
Zero
tolerance. Especially if you have this in your family. Because if you can intervene on a 17-year-old in a meaningful way, you can alter the trajectory of that life. And whereas if you try to do it at 25, your chances are far less good.
What kind of tools do we need to live a better life?
Well, you know, I mean, I talk about, you know, in Recover to Live, I talk about this, you know, seven essential tools to recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, you know, I mean, the things that, you know, nutrition, exercise, meditation, community. These are all things that matter in a human's life, no matter whether they're a drug addict or alcoholic and sober or not sober or a normal person. So how you engage the world, you can enrich your life by what you choose to focus on. I mean, if you're sitting in front of your television all day and you weigh 300 pounds and you're eating, food that sends your system out of whack and you're not exercising and those kinds of things, chances are your mental state's not going to be very good, your emotional state's not going to be very good, and your physical state's not going to be very good.
Right.
So there's a lot that we can do to mitigate the difficult side of our humanity, and all of us have it. You know, I mean, my own personal belief is that coming to this plane, this planet Earth, is a teaching experience for all of us. I choose to look at it that way. Religion has always been about kind of trying to figure out why we're really here and how we can best survive this place so we can go on to something that's less problematic.
Right.
And I think, you know, my own personal belief is there's a lot we can do here to maximize our experience and move that process along.
Well, and one of them is to understand what you point out very well in your book, that in this human condition, that addiction is a brain illness, not simply a failure of willpower. And I think that's really important, because once you understand that, which you talk about through this, that there's where you can make a difference. So, I mean, there's a lot of self-assessment tools in this book, too, quizzes you can take to see if you are in trouble or someone you love is in trouble. So once, it's really important to see that, because as you say, life is full of lessons. We are here to learn our lessons. But once we've learned them and see the other side, there's a lot we can do. What made you write this book to help others from what you've been through?
Well, you know, I this is my fourth book, and I basically was sitting home one day listening to some guy on TV trying to sell his treatment center through a book he had written about the addiction cure, and he doesn't believe addiction is a disease and all of that. And I thought, this guy is the most credible, this guy is the face of addiction on television, and he's giving out bad information. And there's a lot of people out there who are selling bad information to people who are their most vulnerable.
Right.
And I wanted to put together a book because of my position, I know this illness, both from having it and from studying it and all of that. And my position at the White House and at the UN and my legacy with my family, where people trust me, and I could access the best and the brightest minds on the planet and give people the real scoop on what this thing is and what it isn't. And that's what I did. I interviewed 150 of the smartest people on the planet, and I gave the best evidence-based science on what's going on with these illnesses, all of them.
All of them. So once you understand that, can you retrain your brain?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is about neuroplasticity, and this is really what recovery is. It's retraining your brain to live life in recovery, whereas and it starts in the basic kinds of things with cravings and not giving into cravings, and then soon you begin to realize, I can get through that, so what else can I get through? And then, you begin to, you train your brain towards a spiritual context if you want to. There's a lot of things that, and it's all in our mind. We're beginning to understand with the brain research now the power of the mind in terms of affecting every aspect of our life.
But you have to understand it. You have to be that strong. You have to be that smart, which I suggest you have to get this book. Because without a book like this, as I said earlier, and I think this is true, once you read this book, you can't lie to yourself anymore. You have to look at the truth, and the truth is right there. But the truth really will, to say an old proverb, certainly it will set you free. Because once you understand, you can do something about it. So there's an awful lot of hope in this book. And you're a great example of hope. I mean, you started using drugs when you were 12 years old. You certainly have been in the limelight. And I think it's probably harder to recover when you've been a celebrity and well-known like you, right? Don't you think that makes it...
I don't know whether that's true, because I think, first of all, I talk about this disease as an equal opportunity disease. It attacks all aspects of our society, but the truth is recovery isn't an equal opportunity recovery for a lot of folks, and that is that a lot of people come back with real challenges to overcome. They're in abusive situations, they're in poverty, They're struggling with issues of discrimination or whatever. I mean, I had a big life to come back to.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 30 years old, and I had a law degree, and I had people who were willing to help me, and I had people that would buy my book because of where I came from. So I was very lucky.
It's true.
Not most people are not as lucky as I was, and it's a struggle. It is hard. If you spent 20 years of your life just medicating yourself and dealing with this addiction issue, and then you suddenly have to, learn how to, hold a job and figure out money situations and relationships. And it's the most challenging thing any human being will ever do.
Yeah. No,
will
I hear
ever
you.
Do.
And
so,
if, yeah.
So anybody that does it deserves a lot of credit. Most people look at them, okay, good, you're not drinking anymore. You shouldn't be drinking. People that are able to come back and get a life, which a lot of people do, and actually become exceptional in that life, which a lot of people do in recovery, should deserve a lot of credit.
But they can't do it alone, right? We need help. I think that's the thing that you stress so much in your book, that you need help. Yes, maybe there are some people that don't, but there's help out there. We're looking at it like a disease, as you talk about, looking at it without the shame and without the character flaws and without all that blame on top of it, that says that you can get help, you can make a difference, is really a very important message of your book.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. I think we're here to be of service to one another,
mm-hmm.
and I think that in terms of getting the strength to overcome anything, it's very helpful, critical even, to have the support of the people in your life that you love. And certainly the recovery experience, the collective recovery experience of those people in 12-step programs has proven that universally. I mean, there's millions of people all over the world that are connected by 12-step programs, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, where they get the support in meeting rooms all over the world from strangers,
right,
who have the same issue that they have. And that gives them the strength to go another day.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes all that they have.
Right.
Quite simply.
Right.
And
it's enough. It's enough. I mean, those groups help, but books like this help a lot, too. And you're not, I just want to remind the listeners that you're not just talking about alcohol and drugs. You're talking about all kinds of addictions, because our brain works the same way in all kinds of addictions, regardless of what it is. And it could be gambling. It could be sex addicts. It could be.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
so
codependency for folks who are in families with these issues. Because codependency is one of the most devastating of all of these illnesses.
So
that can absolutely, I mean, I'm sort of lucky that I got to manifest my illness in terms of active drug addiction. I mean, I could have died, but there are plenty of people who do it, internalize it, and it becomes codependency, and that will make their lives miserable, and it's very difficult to find a way out. I work for a treatment center named Karen Treatment Centers on the East Coast, and they have a great program called Breakthrough, which is all about, you know, people coming there who are the victims of addiction in terms of in their families, to deal with the issues that they have to deal with. And those folks are sick as anybody I've ever run into in terms of the stuff that they have to.
Well, it certainly makes you look at it in a very different sort of way. And you've done a great job at really getting it out there and getting a voice out there and backing it. And I think taking the shame away, which is half of the problem. Once you realize that it's not really totally up to you, you know, it's not you, you're not to blame, you're not weak, this is a disease and you need to fight it, it's a great thing. Christopher Kennedy Lawford, I thank you so much for joining us today. Everyone, the book is Recover to Live, Kick Any Habit, Manage Any Addiction. It is a terrific book. He's done an incredible lot of work. It's just absolutely wonderful. Recover to Live, Drew Prinsky said, may alter the way society looks at the disease of addiction and those who are suffering from it. I totally agree. Terrific book. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Shannon, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for everything you do. You're doing a great job, and it's really a great service. Thank you so much. Christopher Kennedy Lawford, again, the book is Recover to Live, Kick Any Habit and Manage Any Addiction. We have to wrap it up for today, but thank you for joining us here on WTBQ. And until next time, don't forget to make good choices.